It is time for the Media Beat from David Tereshchuk, his weekly review of media coverage for Robinhood Radio and exclusive to Robinhood Radio. David is a multimedia and international journalist with his own online column at themediabeat.us. And as a special correspondent since 2012, he has contributed TV reports to the PBS network, mostly on ethical issues. Here's David.
This is David Tereshchuk with the Media Beat for the weekend beginning April 26, 2024. My dispatch comes once again from Dublin, Ireland, Western Europe. But I've just made a trip to another more southern country in the European Union, Italy, just as that country was hosting a global summit. All the foreign ministers of the G7 countries, no longer, pointedly, the G8, since Russia was blackballed from membership for its violent aggression against a neighbor, Ukraine. And meanwhile, along with the wave of sympathy for Ukraine, that generally less powerful of the two nations at war has been given almost a reward or compensation for being invaded. The country is now on track, albeit a slow track, to becoming a member of that charmed circle, the EU. Logic, which is not always our best guide, would also suggest NATO membership, admittance for Ukraine into the armed, charmed circle. That might even be not too far away in the future, though such an extra big step would have to take account of the inevitable fear in both US and Europe of too provocatively offending the big gangster figure in this scenario, Vladimir Putin. Ahead of the global summit, the Italian Foreign Minister Antonio Tajani had put it most concisely to reporters. "We need to be very prudent," he said, "because having Ukraine as a full NATO member, quote, could mean World War III," unquote. Our flight from Dublin to Milan almost stereotypically evoked that device so beloved by way too many novelists and movie directors. I mean the so-called pathetic fallacy, in which the weather is used to symbolize developments in human affairs. It always rains at funerals, for instance. While we were crossing British airspace, we encountered some really bumpy turbulence. Thereafter, once over the continent itself, we had smooth sailing, or flying, all the way into Milan's Linate Airport. And the vast majority of my fellow passengers, almost all Irish, enjoyed a completely unhindered entry, sailing smoothly through passport control, and thus vividly demonstrating the cherished freedom of movement principle across all of Europe's member countries. Something, of course, that has been given up by the self-harming Britons of Brexit. Unlike all the Irish travellers, I was singled out for individual official inspection. This is a very minor irritation, I know, but I can't help harping on it personally. I retain a British passport as well as my American one. It's handy for a journalist in some regions of the world where America might be held in some disfavour. But now, that British passport has precisely 1/27th of its previous value to me, after Britain's exit reduced EU membership from 28 to 27 countries. Friends tell me I should shut up now and stop harping on it. Get over it. Well, in Italy, ministers including the US Secretary of State Tony Blinken all met under the chairmanship of Italy's Tajani. On the Middle East, the group called on Hamas to release all hostages and reminded Israel to respect international and humanitarian law, and also show military restraint in Gaza. More than that, they urge Israeli restraint toward Iran as well, now that the war has widened to include a direct face-off between two sovereign nations in the region. Something of a sigh of relief emanated from the summit attendees that they saw no dramatic military escalation take place on their short 3-day watch. Europe-wide, there was a huge sigh of relief across a great swathe of the continent's media once the United States aid package for Ukraine was finally freed up from the Trumpian Republicans' clammy grip in the Congress. It's hard to overestimate the seriousness of concern throughout Europe over the recently elevated danger of defeat for Ukraine. Even President Zelensky himself said defeat could be the result of the congressional logjam on military equipment. It's fair to say Europeans are experiencing the Ukraine conflict in a visceral manner that doesn't seem wholly appreciated across much of America's media. By the way, to be fair to Britain, which I can be, its current hapless government, for all its Little Englander outlook as evinced by Brexit, is not behaving in a totally isolationist fashion. Prime Minister Rishi Sunak flew this week to Poland for discussions with its recently reinstalled Prime Minister Donald Tusk, and then with the head of NATO and the German Chancellor. Sunak rode the wave of relief about the US Congress sending Ukrainian support to President Biden's desk, and took the opportunity of announcing Britain's biggest ever military aid package to Ukraine. While still in Poland, he made a point, perhaps unsurprisingly given where he was, in a country immediately adjacent to Ukraine, of saying that Putin, quote, will not stop at the Polish border if his assault on Ukraine was not thwarted. Sunak's own hometown and generally supportive newspaper, the London Evening Standard, often the very embodiment of a Little England mentality, called the $620 million package a record military aid deal, something totally unprecedented. But it also realistically pointed out that it, quote, comes after the U.S. Congress approved a critical $61 billion in support. So America retains its undisputed role of biggest player in the schoolyard, the world's leading democracy. Approaching, indeed, in just a few months' time, democracy's biggest test, a general election, which is what it remains, however much it may resemble, in American media especially, a series of court reports involving a shady property developer with pubescent sexual tastes. Of course, America is far from the only country living through an election year. When 2024 opened, you may remember the media beat looking forward to something like 60 or more national elections spread across the globe. This week saw reports of the beginning, only the beginning, for India, the world's largest democracy by population, as it rolls out its unparalleled, vast and cumbersome vote-casting and vote-counting process, which will last a whole 6 weeks. And Europe is not left out. Just 7 weeks from now, we'll see a pan-European vote. The European Parliament once had 751 representatives from 28 countries, but now, without Britain's membership, it will be electing just 705 from its now 27 member nations. Ireland's national broadcaster, RTE, is paying a lot of attention to the developing campaign. From an Irish angle, obviously, but as always, the network is trying just as much to elicit a broad 27-country overview. For this, just as the Parliament went into its pre-election recess yesterday, Thursday, RTE's own specialist in Europe, Tommy Maskell, gained help from that far-from-Little Englander publication, London's world-embracing Financial Times. The clearly emerging message that the FT's tireless Strasbourg correspondent Andy Bounds was able to report on was that deep anxieties about security are totally eclipsing what happened in Europe's last round of elections back in 2019. In that year, a surge of worries about climate change resulted in the striking voter phenomenon that the media labelled Europe's Green Wave. According to the Parliament's own opinion polls that journalists are now keenly poring over, migration has peaked since 2019 as a widely concerning issue, but it then has interestingly dropped from top of mind among the Europe-wide electorate. In its place has come the 2022 Russian invasion of Ukraine, very clearly altering pretty well everyone's calculations about the future. Security for Europe's voters means a desire for beefed-up defence forces and strongly expressed fears in many countries, especially in the East, of an actual invasion into their own territory by Putin's military. The President of the European Commission, Ursula von der Leyen, is clearly monitoring all this concern very closely. She owes her position, after all, to being chosen by the elected members of that parliament. She grabbed the disbanding parliament's attention and that of media all across Europe when she told members that if and when she's re-elected after the upcoming vote, Europe should establish a new executive post among her team of commissioners, a European Commissioner for Defense, no less, Europe's very own defense secretary in American terms. And she said, Central and Eastern Europe, where fears of Russia are, of course, at their highest, could well be the region from which that commissioner might come. These security concerns do now appear paramount, much more than the environment. Generally across the continent, including, if you like, big mainstream European countries like Germany and France, centralized euro efforts to coax the public into eco-friendly policies in their own domestic lives, like driving electric cars, changing the heating systems in people's homes, are resulting in some backlash, since they are costly exercises for the individual voter and his or her pocketbook. Political commentators are now suggesting the green wave might be replaced by a grey wave, battleship grey, I think we could say, that could lead to greater investment of taxpayers' money in military hardware, with the aim of deterring any further spread of Russian aggression. As I said, it's hard to overstress the importance to Europe of Ukraine's precarious position. That's all from the Media Beat this week. If you have been, thanks for listening.
Thank you very much, David. We will talk to you next week. David can be found at themediabeat.us.